From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Democratic Senator Cory Booker on Thursday upended the confirmation hearings of Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh by threatening to release documents about the nominee marked confidential and then releasing them. The senator decided that there was no official rule that he was breaking and dared the Republicans on the committee to launch any formal charges or procedures to censure him, saying, "Bring it." Senate Democratic leaders backed him, including Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Here is Senator Booker speaking up at the hearing.
There is no Senate rule that I violated, because there's no Senate rule that accounts for this process. And I say to a chairman that I respect, that I believe has been fair and good to me, I will say that I did willingly violate the chair's rule on the committee confidential process. I take full responsibility for violating that, sir. And I violate it because I sincerely believe that the public deserves to know this nominee's record. In this particular case, his record on issues of race and the law. And I could not understand, and I violated this rule knowingly, why these issues should be withheld from the public. Now, I appreciate the comments of my colleagues. This is about the closest I'll probably ever have in my life to an I am Spartacus moment. My colleagues, numerous of them, said that they too accept the responsibility. There were very serious charges that were made against me by my colleague from Texas. I don't know if they were political bluster or sincere feelings. If what he said was sincere, there actually are Senate rules governing the behavior of senators. If he feels that I, and now my fellow colleagues who are with me, have violated those rules, if he is not a tempest in a teapot, but sincerely believes that, then bring the charges. Go through the Senate process to take on somebody that you said is unbecoming to be a senator. Let's go through that process, because I think the public should understand that at a moment that somebody's up for a lifetime appointment, that this issue, does the public have a right to know? This is not about the Presidential Records Act. This is not a violation of the Presidential Records Act, not a violation of Senate rules, sir. But if somebody's going to land those charges, I hope that they will follow through with me and Senator Durbin, Senator Coons, Senator Whitehouse, Senator Hirono, Senator Blumenthal, now Senator Feinstein, I hope that they will bring charges against us. And I'm ready to accept the full responsibility for what I have done, the consequences for what I have done, and I stand by the public's right to have access to this document and know this nominee's views on issues that are so profoundly important, like race and the law, torture and other issues.
Mr. Chairman, may I read the Senate Rule 29.5, the standing rules of the Senate, for the benefit of all senators. Any senator, officer, or employee of the Senate who shall disclose the secret or confidential business or proceedings of the Senate, including the business and proceedings of the committees, subcommittees, and offices of the Senate, shall be liable, if a senator, to suffer expulsion from the body, and if an officer or employee, to dismissal from the service of the Senate and to punishment or contempt. I would correct the senator's statement. There is no rule. There is clearly a rule that applies.
Then apply the rule, Chairman, and bring the charges.
Mr. Chairman.
And that's Senator Cory Booker on the third day of the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. The hearings started out on Tuesday with protests from Democratic senators and also from members of the audience who repeatedly interrupt senators. 70 people, mostly women, were arrested, 61 of them from inside the hearing. Helping to coordinate these protests that was such a critical symbol of public anger over the Kavanaugh hearings was my guest, Rachel O'Leary Carmona, Chief Operating Officer of the Women's March. Welcome to the program, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, tell us a little bit about your reaction to what has just happened. You and I are speaking on Thursday, and this incredible action by Cory Booker to say there's no sense to the fact that these documents that show very important parts of and attitudes by Kavanaugh on issues such as racial profiling should be kept confidential. What do you make of it?
I think that Cory Booker's actions are to be lauded. I think that it's great that he's showing the kind of integrity and bravery that the protesters are showing themselves. And I think it's a high act of patriotism to really be trying to bring the truth to light in these conversations so that a full vetting process can happen. You know, and in relation to the content of the leaks, I think that it's things that we have been questioning this whole time, and it really resurfaces the questions about how truthful Brett Kavanaugh has been in representing his previous decisions when now we are faced with evidence that suggests that his positions are not what he has portrayed them to be.
Were you also surprised by the fact that Chuck Schumer posted a tweet backing him? The other Senate Democrats on the committee have backed him. There was protest from the Democrats at the very beginning on the first day of the hearing, where Senator Richard Blumenthal said, "We call on the committee to adjourn these hearings." The document they received, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of pages of documents literally the night before. But then on day two, it kind of seemed like they'd rolled over and questioned Kavanaugh, and in a way it seemed to legitimize the hearing. Now on day three, we see a pretty strong protest again.
I think that it's encouraging that Schumer and other folks are willing to take a stand right now. We had conversations with Chuck Schumer, and I know that he has been trying to find his place in what kind of resisting this process that is both so irregular and not transparent looks like. And so I'm glad that he is also stepping forward, both in integrity and transparency, to serve the American public and also his constituents in forcing a full vetting process of Brett Kavanaugh.
So let's talk about what took place on the first day of the hearings. Tell me the role that you played as woman after woman. There were a few men in there too. Spoke up from the audience and were dragged out by cops. They interrupted Senator Chuck Grassley. What was happening there? What was the how did you lay the groundwork for everything that took place there?
Mm-hmm. The action that has been going on this week is part of a larger coordinated strategy from Women's March, and particularly with one of our closest partners, the Center for Popular Democracy. And the strategy behind it is really that we have to meet the assault on our rights in the moment. And when there is an advanced assault, when there is something that's as serious as the nomination of somebody like Brett Kavanaugh, who has the ability to, from the bench where he to be confirmed, to roll back a generation of rights for women and for our allies. And so we just couldn't, that's not something that we can sit idly by and watch. And so part of our larger term strategy is to make sure that we are mobilizing our constituents and our bases with our partners who have done an incredible job of the planning for this action, and making sure that we're building power in communities and then demonstrating that power when it's necessary in Washington, D.C. to hold lawmakers accountable, to the traditions of our American democracy. We're talking about the freedom to protest. We're talking about transparent nominations processes. And we're talking about processes that really should be consistent. When Justice Kagan was going through her nominations process, something like 98% of her previous background documents was made available to the Senate, while something more like 7% of Brett Kavanaugh's has been. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're looking for equality and transparency in all of the best traditions of the government as the processes were set up to do.
For our TV audience, we're now going to play some of the images, some of the videos of the women being dragged out. So the public was allowed to enter the confirmation hearing room. What was the process by which they managed to do that? How did they coordinate ahead of time? Were there messages that were coordinated? And I understand on the second day, they allowed fewer people to come in?
Well, so the hearings are supposed to be open to the public, and so I will say that while that was the case, there has been some irregularity in the way that the public has been allowed to attend, in that the attendance time has been limited, which is irregular. There were times on Wednesday when the hearings were closed inexplicably and then opened again with no explanation to the public. And so it's been a bit, again, of an irregular process and outside of the common practices of nominations hearings. And when the crowd came in and kind of filtered through, some of the people who stood up in dissent were with us, and some of them were from other communities or solo. And
really, so not everybody was sort of part of a coordinated effort.
Correct. This is a very strong grassroots movement. So it's not just a couple of, organizations that really have taken umbrage. This is a strong concern across the country, not only about the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, but about the process through which he is being confirmed.
So let's now tie the two together, which is the protest that we're seeing, the sort of formal protest from Democrats and the grassroots protests from below. There was a letter sent to Chuck Schumer earlier this week by a number of organizations, including the Women's March, saying that he was failing people by not whipping into shape every single Democratic senator to oppose Kavanaugh. How critical is it for the Democrats to feel the pressure from below, and not just Democrats, for all senators, for politicians to feel that grassroots pressure? How critical is the protest?
I think it's absolutely central. Women's March has organized three of the four largest mobilizations that have happened since Trump's election. All of them were in excess of 1.5 million, some of them topping 2 million and as large as 5 million. And there are a lot of constituents for specifically Senator Schumer in those groups. And what's going to happen, what next steps look like here, is that we are going to continue to be in the streets. We are going to continue to train folks. We're going to build capacity in communities, and we're going to vote. And senators that don't act with our best interests in mind, and senators that continue to put our safety and the safety of our futures, our families, our daughters, our sons at risk, will be met with swift political consequence.
It's so important to see that dynamic that sadly we haven't seen very much of until Trump came in, where politicians are pushed rather than backed, you know what I mean? That
yes.
They are pressured rather than simply kowtowed to, or you know, that you have activists and people with interests saying, sort of begging for a seat at the table. They're instead pushing from outside. And of course, that is always more effective. And the right knows, as the extreme right, I should say, especially knows this, because they have effectively pushed Republicans quite a bit to the right on many issues. What do you make of the fact that right this week, as the Kavanaugh hearings are happening, you had the release of the Bob Woodward book showing the inner workings and the sort of crazy town, to quote General Kelly, of the Trump administration, and the op-ed in the New York Times, the anonymous op-ed that said that this was by somebody who was part of the resistance, but was quick to say not part of the popular resistance on the left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of things. I mean, I think in general, I think more transparency is better than less transparency. However, I think that there's reason for us to be very careful about the ways that we approach, looking and synthesizing these pieces of information, not knowing who the person is, who, for example, wrote the anonymous New York Times op-ed. I think that there are some questions to be answered there in terms of timing and in terms of, motivation and all kinds of things like that. And so while I take all of those things with a grain of salt, what I can step back and take away from and say that the Trump administration is in some hot water. It's very it's beleaguered right now with problems from all sides. There's questions that are being raised around the Russia investigation and all of those pieces. There are questions about just the general running and his and the ability to govern on behalf of the Trump administration and Trump himself. And that's showing up in all kinds of places, from national security was named in the op-ed to the nominations process that we have right now. So I think that there's where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's a lot of smoke right now around the administration. And I think that we are going to see the Republican Party really thinking about its continued affiliation as, you know, as some of these things continue, as some of these scandals continue to deepen.
And then, of course, we've also seen primary election win after win by progressive women of color and non-women of color who are progressives as well, but especially the women of color, like Ayanna Pressley, whose recent win in Massachusetts, in a district that is essentially guaranteed to a Democrat, means that you're going to have even more progressives in Congress, which is absolutely critical. Do you see this wave of women who are running and many winning as a direct outcome of the outrage that was felt the day after Donald Trump's inauguration at the Women's March?
We absolutely see the wave of women who are moving forward to, winning primaries and heading to the general as a consequence of Women's March. And it's no surprise, because women are doing right now what women have been doing for a millennia, which is when there are problems, when communities need to come together, when there seem to be intractable, you know, challenges to a community, women have come together and been the leadership and the glue that has made sure that our civilization has continued to, exist and thrive. And so as women are doing that right now, in this moment that's a constitutional and a moral crisis in our country, I'm proud to be a part of an organization that has created the space and the momentum for the narratives of women, and particularly women of color, to be able to rise to the surface with more amplification. And I'm also really excited to go and vote for women in the general in 2018.
At stake in the Kavanaugh hearings and with the appointment of Kavanaugh, if he actually wins, if he's actually confirmed to the court, is, of course, the issue of abortion. I mean, that's one of many, many issues, but that is such a critical one that directly impacts women's health and reproductive women's rights in general. We are now finding out about the things that Brett Kavanaugh has said and done, said about abortion, that the Republicans would rather we not see, in particular his dissenting opinion in the Garza case, where he basically thought that wanted to place a very high hurdle to a 17-year-old pregnant undocumented teenager who wanted to get an abortion. Mm-hmm. What did you make of his justifications made to Dianne Feinstein on Wednesday when she questioned about that? He seems to want to say, or has said, that Roe is settled law, but a deeper look suggests that he questions Roe versus Wade.
Right. I think that it's clear from the documents that we've seen, but I think it's also clear from what we already knew, that Roe, he may be hiding behind the fact that he says that Roe is settled law, but in his decisions, that hasn't been apparent. I think it's an open question. And I think that there's been some duplicity in terms of his answers in order to give political cover for senators who may be held accountable for voting Supreme Court justice in who plans to gut Roe. And I think that the path forward to that is clear, is that there's many ways to kind of split hairs in the conversation. And Roe is not only in danger by being ruled and generally unconstitutional, but also ways to make it practically impossible for women to have access to reproductive health care. And it's critically important and related to the fact that women and women of color are running for office, because the impacts of the threats that Brett Kavanaugh brings as a possible Supreme Court justice will be most strongly felt by women of color. And, in terms of healthcare access and reproductive healthcare, things like that. So I think it's really important to keep an eye on that and to understand that the there is a strong reason to have Brett Kavanaugh be misrepresenting his views. And also when Kamala Harris questioned him yesterday, he had no answer.
Let me actually tell our audience what she asked. I was about to bring that up. Senator Kamala Harris said if he knew, asked Kavanaugh if he knew of any laws that, quote, the government has power to make over the male body, like it does over the female body. And of course, he didn't have an answer. There was silence for a few seconds. And then he basically said, well, I'm happy to answer a more specific question. How important is it for senators to bring that up, not just to Kavanaugh directly, but in essence, to the Republican Party and to those opponents of the right to an abortion, and also to those who say they're in favor of the right to abortion, like Senators Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins? Mm-hmm.
I think it's critically important to bring it up because the American people have spoken very decisively on this issue, and there is a clear majority of people who favor the continued legality of safe and accessible abortions and who do not favor Roe v. Wade being turned over. So I think it's imperative that we continue to ask those questions so that these senators are being held to account when they are making decisions that do not reflect their constituents' best interests or opinions.
So let's also now talk about what you think will happen over the next couple of days. Are women continuing to protest inside the hearing, the Senate confirmation hearing, Senate Judiciary Committee's confirmation hearing? And what sort of protests have been taking place outside? Because we didn't get to that.
Yes. So there have been, protests inside and outside. My understanding is that there was a little over 75 arrests that were made on Tuesday. CNN reported over 70 yesterday, which was Wednesday. Today, Thursday, I haven't seen any initial counts yet, but I do know that arrests are happening inside of the hearing room, and there are protests happening both inside the hearing room and outside. There have been occupations of senators' offices who have said that they would meet with constituents and have not followed through with that commitment. There have been occupations of offices of senators who are undecided and who won't speak to their constituents about what their decision may be or what criteria or factors may help them make up their mind. And so there are a multi-pronged approach for the people to really be trying to get their voices heard by their senators, sometimes with more success than others. And I anticipate that will continue to happen even after this week's protests have ended.
Finally, Rachel, do you feel that through the actions that Senator Cory Booker took, people want to just easily dismiss that, well, and including the Republican senator in questions said, well, you might be doing this just because you're running for president. Do you have a sense that the actions that Booker has taken and any other actions that may come from the Democrats to say that, this entire process is flawed, we're going to release these documents, that it has a chance of actually stopping this nomination?
I can't speak to anybody's motivation, but what I can say is that I hope and expect that the senators who are in the position to be able to show the same kind of bravery and integrity that the protesters have shown do that and give us an opportunity to have a full vetting process. And in that due course, I think then that the senators and hearing the voices of their constituents and the American people could have the opportunity to really have a full conversation about that. And it would be the stance of Women's March that we do not want to see Brett Kavanaugh confirmed. And we hope that senators really take seriously their responsibility to execute this process with integrity so that it moves forward in a way that's consistent with other processes that have happened to confirm Supreme Court justices.
Well, Rachel, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you with all of the work that you and the women with the Women's March are doing. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. My guest has been Rachel O'Leary. She is the Chief Operating Officer of the Women's March, and we've been discussing protests at the Kavanaugh hearings. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at RU with Sonali.